Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Yours on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul. I'm Deirdre Schuler, your host. And you know, with the subject of bullying prominent in the news, I thought it would be nice to bring some attention to the subject. And due to that, I've invited Dr. Stephen Frierman to the show. Dr. Frierman is a sports psychologist and a professor of health studies and kinesiology at Hofstra University. And for those that don't know what kinesiology is, it's the study of human movement, and that can include biomechanics and orthopedics, strength and conditioning, sports psychology, and different methods of rehabilitation. And Dr. Frierman was also sports psychology editor of American Football Quarterly. He served on the panel of experts, which included NFL and collegiate football coaches, and participated in two conferences for AFQ, which provided continuing ed credit for high school football coaches, as well as work for a few collegiate football players. Presently, Dr. Frierman serves on the editorial board of the Journal of Youth Sport, Youth First, where he is the sports psychology editor. Dr. Frierman earned his undergraduate degree at CUNY Brooklyn College, his master's degree at the University of North Texas, and his PhD at the University of North Carolina, Greensboro. At Hofstra University, he has developed or modified 8 different courses and published 16 articles focusing on performance-enhancing strategies and coaching effectiveness. He has authored the book Commit to Be Fit Now and Forever, and is currently writing a second book about performance enhancement strategies for sports and exercise. His research interests in sports include motivation, team dynamics, psychological momentum, performance-enhancing substance, and performance-enhancement strategies. In exercise, Dr. Frierman has focused on the barriers that stop individuals from exercising and living healthy, as well as the strategies to overcome these barriers. Well, we have Dr. Frierman with us today, so why don't we welcome Dr. Stephen Frierman to the show.
Hello, how are
you, Dr. Frierman?
I'm well, how are you?
I'm good, and thank you for coming just such a few days before Thanksgiving and giving us your time.
My pleasure.
Well, I read some of your credentials, as I said, at the top of the show, but, you know, just tell me a little bit about yourself, where you're born and raised and so forth.
I was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. I'm from Canarsie originally, and from there I went to North Texas. That was the first time I was really out of New York living, in Denton, Texas, studying with a sports psychologist named Bob Weinberg. And that got me to UNC Greensboro, where I worked with Dan Gould and Diane Gill. And 22 years later, I've been at Hofstra University happily ever after.
Well, given the fact that your study was sports, were you an athlete in high school or college?
I was a bowler. I considered myself to be a little better than an average athlete. I wasn't a good enough athlete to ever think about going pro except in bowling. And it was right around, I think I was about 16 years old when I started college, that I took an introduction to psychology class, and the professor mentioned various places that you can major in if you were ever interested in psychology, one of which was sports psychology. And I thought to myself, if there was ever a field for me, that was it, because I was always a very strategic, heady player in everything that I ever did. And the thought that there was an actual science out there that could teach proper strategies to think and to be mentally strong is certainly going to be an advantage in playing sports.
Well, let's concentrate then on the situation with the Miami Dolphins with Roger Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin. What can you tell me about that?
Well, first off, it's a very unfortunate situation that this happened. However, it's not something that this is the first time it's ever happened. This has obviously happened many times. It's just the first time it's gotten out in the media. You know, the whole aspect of bullying, while it's a totally unaccepted behavior, and there are some drastic consequences that can occur, it's something that has been going on for a long, long time, and what's going on with Incognito and Martin, it just happens to be the first time it's gotten out into the social media.
Well, is that because in Martin's case, and I guess at NFL, there's a code of silence among the players that you don't let that get out, or... What is the psychological impact on the person being bullied when he has to live under that code?
Well, there's a tremendous impact. You know, when an athlete is being bullied, their self-esteem is going to go right down the drain, number one. They're going to be very hesitant to want to be around certain players because they're afraid of them. They may want to push themselves away from that particular group, which can cause a lot more tension because a player may not be following that quote-unquote code of ethics. It's going to increase the athlete's level of anxiety. It's going to make them tentative on the field. And ultimately, it's going to hurt them not just in sport. It's going to hurt them in life.
Exactly. Now, in terms of the bullying, I'm wondering, where was the coach and why did the other team members seem to not interfere or help Martin?
Well, I wasn't there, so I can't really answer why. Whether or not coaches are privy to this information, it'd be a good idea, you know, for some research to find out whether or not the coaches are going to actually say, yes, I knew about it, but I did nothing. I highly doubt that. So I don't really know where they were. When it comes to the other athletes, that's an excellent question. It's possible that they're not going to go and interfere because they may not be in the mainstream of the chemistry of those particular players involved in the bullying. They don't want to be the ones to be bullied, so they just shy away from it. You know, that's all I can think of. Just like, you know, the same thing that goes on outside of sport, where a child is being bullied in the school system. You know, how come other kids don't tell? Because in most cases, they're afraid.
Well, why does a bully, what kind of person does a bully pick on? I mean, to, like Martin, I know you don't know him, but was he, do you think he was a likable character, or was he shy, or seemed reticent? I mean, what type of person does a bully pick on?
Well, from the information, you know, that I've gathered, the intent to bully Martin was to toughen him up. He was playing soft. So in the NFL, it's a very, very physical sport. You cannot be soft. So they wanted to tough him up. So while bullying in no way is an acceptable behavior, or should be an acceptable behavior, it was done to make him a better player. Okay, that's from the information that I've gathered. And so that's why they did it. If they can toughen him up off the field and then be supportive afterwards, then when he gets on the field, he's going to help himself as a player, and he's going to help the team overall. Now, whether or not coaches said, toughen him up, do what you have to do, I don't really know. It wouldn't surprise me, though.
Well, that's what Cognito was claiming that when all the facts come out, that he was encouraged to do that. But I don't know by whom. Coaches, management, who?
Don't know. You know what? And there's also this fine line between acceptable behavior and unacceptable behavior. You know, we have fair play versus foul play in every single sport. You know, certain times the rules can be bent to some degree. Like, for example, in the NFL now, you can hit a player in one place, but you can't hit a player in another place. You know, when we look at certain terminology, it's very good in sports to be assertive, but it's not good to be aggressive. And the main thing here is that the whole concept of bullying is when the player has an intent to harm the other player. Now, did Incognito intend to harm Martin? The only way we're going to find the truth out to that is to go and ask him and say, did you want to hurt this player? And I'm going to guess he's going to say, no, I didn't want to hurt him. I wanted to make him a better player.
But yet, don't you think he crossed the line when he threatens to kill him and hurt his mother and all that? That's
definitely. No doubt about it. I mean, his behavior is unacceptable, you know, and that just goes into the different types of bullying, where we're all very familiar with the physical aspect of bullying when we're looking to hit somebody or slap, insert physical violence. But there's also verbal bullying when you call people names, you threaten them, you taunt them. There's also relational bullying that occurs when all of a sudden you're excluded from the team activities, you're embarrassed in front of the other players, you gossip and trash talk. So all these things go around, and really what's doing, it's demoralizing and demeaning.
Now, you mentioned to me there has been several incidences that probably just haven't made the news. Can you cite any?
No, I'm not going to go into actual people's names. Just based on looking at the research, looking at the statistics, they don't give the names, but they'll talk about the percentage of people that have been bullied, you know, from youth sports all the way up to the pros, that it's something that the coaches have known for a while. So coaches may, in an interview, may say, yes, I'm aware of it, yes, it has occurred, but they're not about to say who it occurred with and if they were part of the team.
Okay. Now, what do you think is going to happen now that it's come out into the public eye? Will that change the whole nature of, from management's point of view, how hazing is and bullying is done? Is hazing and bullying the same thing or not?
It leads to the same thing. You know, there's an intent to harm. You know, there's an intent to act maliciously. You know, and the end result is someone's getting hurt in the process.
But isn't hazing tolerated throughout the board?
Yes. I mean, like you said, there's that fine line between fair play and foul play. You know, it's okay to do this, but it's not okay to do that. We're going to see a lot more sensitivity to what's going on, because I've heard certain coaches in the NFL talk about the fact that they don't tolerate this behavior, and if they find out about it, there's going to be extreme consequences. And really what has to happen is the players have to be made verbally and in writing aware that these types of behaviors will not be allowed and the consequences are going to be, and so they know that whether they're going to get fined or suspended or something like that. The thing is that a lot of times this is going on, they want to keep it in-house so that they can deal with it in their own way. Once it gets out of house, then all of a sudden it's going to create all this stress for the team to deal with. All the media is going to go in, and they're going to try and get more stories out of it, which in some ways is a good thing. It's good that we get it out. But in other ways, we want to make sure that this stuff doesn't happen anymore.
Right, because there was group bullying going on where they were making rookies pay these exorbitant amount of bills that they were running up.
Yep. That's all part of the initiation process. I don't know if you're familiar with, you know, fraternities and sororities and when people pledge what they have to go through, but there's a certain type of behavior and actions that they have to do in order to, quote-unquote, fit in. So while it's designed and in sport, too, to build team chemistry and cohesiveness, they don't often talk about the negative consequences of forming cliques and people hating each other and talking behind people's back and things of that nature.
Well, they were saying, for example, some of these guys are rookies. They're not making that much money, and some of the seniors are ran up bills over $30,000 or $40,000.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's no way for management to handle that or recoup that for them, because they're really being taken grossly advantage of in that case.
No doubt, no doubt. I mean, what can happen is at the very beginning of training camp or the first meeting, the coaches lay out the law and say, under no circumstances do I want, you know, the rookies or the people that are trying out for the team to go out with the players and have to pay for the bill. I mean, there's a whole host. But oftentimes, you know, in society, rules aren't going to be created and enforced until something bad happens. You know, and this is just a classic case of that. That this has been going on for a long, long time, and if it didn't get out in the media, it would still be going on.
Well, what is team chemistry exactly?
Team
what
chemistry.
Boils down to that?
Well, team. You know, we use the term cohesiveness is where the teammates bond around each other. They have their own separate identity. There's a strong desire to stick together and work hard for a common goal. You know, on a cohesive team, everybody knows their role. You may not like the position you have, but you accept it. There's communication that's going on. There is no cliques where people talk negatively about each other. You know, it's everybody puts the team first. And
well,
the most successful
missing
team
in the Dolphins? That seemed to be missing in this incident anyway.
Yes, clearly. And you'll see that the teams that are the most successful in sport, in a sport like football, are generally the most cohesive.
Well, yeah, I would think so, because the whole thing is the sports is a team effort.
That's exactly right, yeah. And it's not just on the playing field, it's off the field as well.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned there were different types of bullying. Did you cover that already, or is
yes.
there more to say on that?
Well, just that you know, we focus on the physical aspect of a player getting pushed or shoved or hurt. But just as detrimental is verbal bullying. You know, when people are being threatened and when people are being made to feel so small in front of other people. And that's just very, very difficult. You know, we see the physical, we don't see the psychological.
Well, how do you punish a bully when they've pushed the person so far they commit suicide, and that's happening a lot lately?
Well, the first step is that we need to have a counseling program, okay, to be able to stop bullying. We have to be able to first identify any type of characteristic that leads to what you may think somebody is a bully or somebody is being bullied. You know, and the more sensitive and the more aware we are to that, hopefully we're going to be able to prevent it. Once it gets out of hand, I mean, the law is going to dictate what happens. If someone bullies someone and kills them, then they're going to go to jail for murder. You know, that's how it goes.
Now, do you think it's going to get to that point? Because most people are looking at bullying. They don't even react to it, really. They don't take it as seriously. They might start doing it now because it's more and more happening.
I think they definitely will. You know, we do see, you know, rates of suicide going up, and if we're looking at the fact that the person killed himself because he was being bullied, I think there have to be ramifications for that.
Would you say that they would have to say then that bullying is tantamount to manslaughter?
I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a police officer. That's not my, you know, I don't know. I think that they should be punished if they commit a crime.
Well, that I guess that's what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah.
Is bullying considered a crime? At this stage, it isn't, is it? Or is it?
Well, I would only say this. If someone is bullying someone and instills physical harm into that person, they get hurt, then that could be a crime. You know?
Okay. I think at this point it should be treated as a crime if it's never been treated as a crime before.
I agree.
But what is the psychological makeup of a bully?
Well, basically, it's been shown that somebody who is a bully, in many cases, has had a very difficult life. You know, they may have been bullied as a child. There may have been domestic violence, verbal abuse that have occurred. They often come from very, very tough lifestyles. And as a result of that, they end up becoming that particular bully.
Well, why do you? What is the psychological aspects of why bullying occurs in like major sports across the board?
Well, it's designed to show dominance. You know, when someone's bullying someone or taking advantage, they're tougher. They're able to get what they want. You know, if they can instill fear in their opposition, then that's going to create an advantage. You know, we could look, for example, at football. Let's say you have someone who is known to bully the quarterback and, you know, and hit very, very hard and injure certain players. That may instill just a little bit of hesitation in the quarterback. And all of a sudden, when the quarterback is doubting himself and takes that extra second to throw the ball or doesn't read the defense, all of a sudden it's going to be an advantage for the other team. Same thing occurs in hockey. You know, bullying in professional hockey was accepted for years and years and years. In fact, there were certain players designed to go out on the ice and get into a fight with other players to have a penalty to get those players off the ice. And they were paid well to be a bully.
Wow. Well, then tell me what slump busting is.
Say that again?
Slump busting, is that to get the person out of a certain slump? I mean, if I was being bullied, as you say, you're not going to perform as well as you would. So then your game gets into a slump. Is that slump busting?
Well, as a result of being bullied, that can cause someone to get into a slump. But basically, slump busting is when the performance of the athlete goes to a very, very, very low level. You know, that they wind up playing poorly over consistent periods. For example, take somebody who's missed, you know, 7 or 8 field goals in a row. Somebody who is 0-for-30 in batting. You know, those are examples of slumps. Now, could bullying be a possible reason why? It could, but slumps come from thousands of other things. Having to do with sports other than bullying. I don't think bullying is the main correlate in a slump.
Oh, okay. Well, how do most people deal with, or athletes deal with, their mental mistakes?
that's an excellent question. Many times the mental mistake will be kept inside. You know, the athlete's going to keep it inside, because when the coach is asking the player, are you ready to play? A player is not about to say, no, coach, I don't have a lot of confidence today. No, I'm worried. I'm nervous. I'm having trouble concentrating. The player's not going to say that, because then the player's going to get benched. So the mental mistake that a player makes, really what the player needs is mental training. They need to learn how to deal with their mistakes. In fact, a number of years ago, I wrote an article about the mental mistakes, the different types of mistakes that are made in sport and how to go about dealing with those mistakes. You know, and one of the things is, if you're making mental mistakes, then you need mental practice. Yet the most common type of practice that occurs in sport is physical. But if I'm making a mental mistake, all the physical practice in the world is not going to help me.
What would be a mental mistake, and how would you go about healing that or correcting that?
A mental mistake might be overthinking or thinking of the wrong things. You know, for example, let's say I'm thinking about the fact that I don't want to get benched, or I'm thinking about I didn't like the referee's call. Okay, that would be a mental mistake. Let's say I'm thinking about 5 things when I should only be thinking about 1 thing. You know, examples of mental mistakes. Thinking about the outcome of the game. If we lose, you know, our season's over, instead of thinking about the process of what am I going to do to play well. So that's an example of a mental mistake.
Well, let's say there's a lot of wear and tear on the body when playing football, for mm-hmm. example. Do the players have to mentally prepare for the pain and even fear of injury psychologically?
Definitely. When a player is physically injured and yet they're still going out to play, they have to be mentally ready to play. In fact, some athletes, it's amazing, you wouldn't even know they're hurt because they're so mentally strong until you see them in the locker room and what they look like after the game. But during the game, they're able to play at such a high level. You know, those are the athletes that are our superstars, the ones that really, really excel. Yet, when you have those physical problems, you need to get yourself mentally ready. Just like when you're injured, you have to get yourself mentally ready. There's a whole thing called the psychology of injury that's very important for athletes to learn how to deal with if and when they do get hurt in sport.
Well, what are the ramifications later, because you deal with health issues as well? I mean, when they get older, do those injuries come back to haunt them?
Well, just recently there's been a lot of information about the number of concussions that athletes have incurred in the NFL, and that once their career is over, you know, they're battling, you know, headaches and dizziness and, you know, and other problems of that nature. So there can be a lot of ramifications. Generally, the more physical the sport or the more you're susceptible to injury and the more times you've gotten injured, the more likely you're going to be dealing with this particular situation for quite a long time.
And is there anything in place for the athlete who has to go through that? Does the sports association have some kind of a clinic or doctors or something to aid with that?
Well, they're working. I know right now, I think there was $700 million that was going to be given out to the players that have had these problems. So that's a very important step. I know the various unions of professional sports also working to make sure that players get the necessary coverage that they need when their career is over.
Well, you know, they talk a lot about steroids, and are they encouraged without directly being encouraged to use enhancement drugs?
I can't say that they are or they're not. I know at one time in certain sports, it was a very, very popular weapon that the athletes used, that coaches did know about it, but they didn't do much about it. We go all the way back till, I don't know if you're familiar with who Lyle Alzado was, played for the Denver Broncos, Hall of Famer, and he was on 60 Minutes before he passed away. He had brain cancer and said, it's the steroids that killed me. That was one. So at one time it was known. But as we've gotten more advanced and we understand why athletes are taking performance-enhancing substances and what the consequences are, the governing bodies within the sports are working to prevent them. You know, there's randomized drug testing. There's different penalties that athletes have to have to pay. They get fined for it. And so step number one has been in place. Certain sports are more advanced than others, but we are aware of what's going on, and we're no longer turning the other way to say I'm not aware of this, because we do know it does happen, and we're just hoping to prevent it.
Oh, okay, because it's been happening for quite some time.
Yes, it's been happening for a long time. But, for example, if you look at baseball, many of the performance-enhancing substances that athletes were caught with weren't banned at the time because they didn't have any sort of legal documentation to do that. Now a lot of those things are banned. So as a result of that, more athletes are getting caught. And as more athletes are getting caught, hopefully that's going to stop them. You know, the consequence has to be severe enough that the athlete is not willing to take the risk. In addition, there must be education programs to let people know what the problems are later in life. You know, when they're taking these performance-enhancing drugs, like steroids and stuff, sometimes the athletes are thinking only about how it's going to benefit me now. It's going to make me faster and stronger, more resistant to injury. I'm going to make lots more money. Who cares what happens to me 30 years from now? On the other hand, when you start to see those athletes 25, 30 years later, and some of them have gotten sick and basically attributed their sickness to the steroids, hopefully that's going to deter the athletes from making that choice.
Well, now, I mentioned that you wrote a book. Tell me about your book, Comment to Be Fit Now and Forever.
Yes, called Commit to Be Fit Now and Forever. One of my responsibilities at Hofstra University is I coordinate the Fitness for Life classes, and I wrote a book to help people, not just students, but anybody who gets stopped by exercise. You know, people that know what they should be doing it, and then they stop. And they know they do it for a little while, and then they stop. So step number one is to identify the barriers that may stop you from exercising, and then learn strategies to incorporate into your life so that you begin to exercise as a part of your life, and have fun while you're doing it, see the results that you're looking for, you know, and live a healthy lifestyle.
Well, outside of laziness, what would be something that would stop person from exercising, except maybe their body or injuries?
That's possible. I mean, that would be a legitimate reason, but other ones might be the perception that you have no time, that you genuinely would exercise more if only you had the time. So I show people how they do have the time. Another barrier is when you are not seeing results. You know, you wanna see certain results, and you're exercising, and you're not seeing the results, so you quit. When it becomes inconvenient, you know, you have to travel far places. When it's not fun, I don't enjoy doing it. If you have a poor exercise leader, and you don't get along with that person, or you don't like the way the exercise class is being taught, are all possible, you know, barriers that can get in your way and stop you from exercising.
Now, there's all kinds of different exercises. You get on the exercise machine and so forth. And what would you recommend as a good exercise, like yoga or Zumba or all these classes they have? Are there any exercises that are all-around exercises?
I would recommend any exercise that you are motivated to do. There's not any one exercise that's necessarily any better than any other. You just have to want to look forward to doing it, knowing that it's going to make you feel better. So yoga is a fantastic exercise, you know, that works the mental as well as the physical, creates relaxation, it's good for your fitness. Zumba is a much more high-intensity exercise that works. People may want to go and jog. They may want to lift weights. They may want to do martial arts. Anything that you look forward to that you know is going to make you feel better, to me, is the right exercise.
Okay. And the body does require exercise, correct? I mean,
most definitely.
I don't need to exercise. I'm fine. But the body does require some form of exercise, even if it's just walking.
Yes, it does. Otherwise, it begins to break down. And then as it breaks down, we become more susceptible to lifestyle illnesses and diseases. And those are things that we want to be able to prevent as much as possible.
Oh, see, I'm glad you told people that, because some people don't even know what the benefit of exercise is.
Just do it, and you'll see. Okay? I'll tell you something else. If you were to go and look in hospitals and seeing people that have heart disease, that have cancer, that have diabetes, that have gotten strokes, and you look at the relationship between that and how active they are and other behaviors, how well do they eat, do they smoke, are they leading stressful lives, you'll see a very, very, very high correlation between those factors.
Now, one question that I had is, how does one learn to play in the zone?
That's an excellent question. You learn to play in the zone by first analyzing when you're playing well, what's in your head, and when you're playing poorly, what's in your head, and generally you'll notice a difference. When you're playing well, there's usually very little going on in your head, and when you're playing poorly, you're usually overloaded with thoughts. Some may be important thoughts, and some may be totally irrelevant to you succeeding in sport. Then you want to be able to recognize at what level of arousal do you play best. Do you play better when you're calm? Do you play better when you're a moderate level of arousal? Or do you play better when you're pumped up and, you know, running all over the place? You know, whichever way you play the best, that's how we want to get you before the game starts. We don't want to wait for the game to start to hope that you find the zone. We want to create the zone, which is getting your mindset the way it's supposed to be before the game begins.
Well, if there's poor team chemistry, is that whose fault is that?
I can't really blame anybody whose fault it is. I would say that the whole entire team, coaches, players, all have to take responsibility. Everybody has to be on the same page. Starting with the coach and the coach's philosophy, the players have to buy into that. Then on the roles that the players play, there must be a certain understanding as to who's starting, who's coming off the bench. Everybody's role has to be made important.
Clearly defined.
Even if they're not playing a lot, you can make a player who's on the bench a very, very, very important role. And the coach has to acknowledge the players for that particular role. And there has to be feedback all along that particular way. And when everybody understands their role and they're buying into it, I'm not going to guarantee you're going to win the Super Bowl, but you certainly have a much higher probability of success then when people are upset with the amount of playing time, when one person is blaming another for why they're doing that, when players are talking negatively about others, when half the team wants another person to be the quarterback, you know, and things like that. When someone is getting on the field and they're playing to avoid failure, the team is going to fail.
Well, that's an interesting point that just popped into my mind is you listen to the coach, but does the team have any say? Because they're the ones out there playing as to who they would like to see play certain positions and so forth.
They should. However, it's the coach's job to make the decisions, but the players should feel comfortable to communicate to the coach, you know, how they feel about the team. And stuff. And there are different levels of captains on the team. You know, you have your formal captains on the team who the coaches or teammates will pick, and they're leaders on the team, and so the coach is going to work with the captains. And there's also informal captains on a team for players who are looked up to, whether it's because they're seasoned veterans, whether it's because they're from the same country or the same, same part of the world, they went to the same school, you know, whatever that is. And so it's important for the coaches to recognize, you know, and get feedback from those players so that everybody is on the same page. That doesn't mean that the coach is always going to do what the players want, but it's important to know that if you're going to have a cohesive team, that the players feel comfortable enough to go to the coach, and the coach is going to listen, and at the same respect, the coach is going to have an open door to let the players know, you can always come in and talk to me.
Well, why doesn't it work when the goal is to set to win the championship? Is that too much pressure on a player?
Well, because you can't control the outcome of the game. You can't control whether you win or lose. And so it doesn't make sense to focus on things that you can't control. Focus on the process of what's going to increase the probability of you winning. So if since we've been talking a lot about the NFL, imagine, for example, the running back has a goal that I'm going to rush for 100 yards, the quarterback is going to throw 20 completions on defense, someone's going to get 10 tackles. If everybody's focusing on their goal, and in practice they're learning the strategies and the systems needed to do that, if they reach their goal, in most cases, they're going to win a lot more than they're going to lose. But if you keep thinking about winning, for example, how would the New York Giants think about winning the Super Bowl, okay, when the probability is that they're not going to make the playoffs? All they can think about is the very next game. And within that game, what are they going to do within that game to increase their chances of winning?
Well, does the community get involved, or should they get involved with bullying? Because so much of it's happening now. I mean, what has happened within society itself that all of a sudden we are producing so many bullies?
Well, the parents are getting more educated on bullying, and what the parents can do is speak with their children first and inquire about how was the game today or how was practice, is everything okay? They should also look for certain changes in the behavior of their kids. Are they acting differently? Are they upset, depressed, anxious? You know, notice those particular changes and then inquire, is everything okay? Are you getting along with your teammates? You know, do you have friends on the team? You know, do your teammates ever go out? Are you ever invited to go with them? And that's the start. That's one. If it turns out that it does happen, it's important that we teach people to speak up and then let the coaches know right away. Right away.
Well, that identifies the bullied person.
Yes, and the victim as well. For the victim to be able to go to the coach and say, I'm being picked on by so-and-so.
No, I'm saying that's the bullied person that is being picked on.
Yes.
But has a society failed the bully? I mean, what has created the bully?
As I mentioned a little bit earlier, the bully has had generally a very difficult childhood, you know, where there was a lot of probable violence in the house. There might have been abuse in the house. And so as a result of that, they often turned to bully people. In other words, I'm not going to be bullied anymore. I'm going to bully somebody else.
But that's not noticed. What I'm trying to ask is, that's not noticed by society at large, by teachers, by his peer groups or friends that tell their parents or a significant other? Is that's not noticed that he is a bully in the making?
Hopefully now it will be. obviously in the past it hasn't because of the high rate of occurrence of this particular behavior, but now that it's gotten out and we're making the characteristics of bullying more popular, hopefully we're going to have these you know, in-house counseling sessions where people are going to be taught what to be aware of. Just like when you know, when we find out about smoking and drugs, now we're looking at aggressive behavior. We want to be able to teach our teachers to be aware in the school of what to look for, and the same thing for our parents. And then ask the right questions so we can increase the chances that if it is occurring, we can get it before problems arise.
Well, let's say is media. Some of the things that we see in media is very violent. Some of the games are very violent. Like these kids going around punching people in the face. This is the latest thing that apparently has been around for a while but just reached the media.
Yes.
They said that this came about from watching, playing games.
Mm-hmm. If you look at sports, there is a certain type of behavior that is not only accepted, but it's often reinforced. Yet that same exact behavior is not reinforced in society. For example, if someone is being very physical on the football field, that behavior is going to generally be acknowledged. And it's only been recently, within the past year or two, that some of the rules have been changed about how you could hit the quarterback, how high you could hit the quarterback. You can't go helmet to helmet in there. Okay, and so they're trying to decrease the physicality of tackling, you know, for example. Yet, when we start to acknowledge these people, and this person's very, very tough, there are some people who want to emulate that at younger levels. Okay.
Well, in a way, it was approved, right? It was considered macho or whatever.
Yes, it was. But right now, that's looking to be changed.
Okay.
You know, like
obviously, it needs to be changed.
No doubt about it, because then what happens is people think that they can do that behavior in, you know, just out in the schoolyard, you know, yet that's not okay.
Exactly. Or as I say now, kids are walking up punching people in the face.
Yes. There was something on TV. Yes. Yeah, I saw.
Mm-hmm. So in some sense, society has to be blamed for that, for encouragement of that, and now we have to look at ourselves as a society to heal that.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes we don't know. We don't know we've done wrong until damage is done. You can go all the way back to when smoking cigarettes started. You know, it wasn't advertised as a killer. You know,
no, it was cool. You're supposed
it was
to be cool.
It was relaxant. We had movie stars, athletes. You know, all doing that. Many movies. You know, you see people with cigarettes. And then we find out later on that it causes cancer and other respiratory problems, you know, like that. So we didn't know that it was bad until it started to cause major, major damage.
And in some cases, does profit supersede safety?
I certainly think so. You know, I mean, if you want to talk about the cigarettes, which I have a very, very strong passion, about that, there's a lot of profit that's being out there, but it causes a lot more harm than good. You know?
Exactly.
So, but it's out there because it's making money.
Well, that's something that they need to do a paper on. Why are we so profit driven that we've stopped caring about human life?
Good question.
Good paper to do. Speaking of that, are you working on a new book?
Yes, I started. I'm working on a book that's going to deal with the 10 steps to success in sport, focusing on 10 different psychological strategies that can be used.
Can you name a strategy or two?
Well, you mentioned the one about dealing with mistakes. So we're going to that's going to focus on identifying your mistakes. Is it a practice mistake versus a game mistake? Is it a mental mistake versus a physical mistake, a common versus uncommon? And then learn, based upon the mistake, what the strategy is. We also spoke about the outcome. A second chapter is going to be on goal setting. What types of goals do you set in sport, and why do you set these goals? And a goal setting program will be in there. Dealing, dealing with how do you find the zone. We spoke about that as well. We covered a couple of chapters already. You know,
and new
you
rules,
know.
Right? New rules.
Yes. That's right.
And now they have to be new in-house rules as well as management rules, correct?
Yes, yes, definitely. Definitely. Once the rules have been established, you know, and the athletes know what is an accepted behavior and what is not an accepted behavior, then it becomes their choice. You know, are they willing to take the risk to, you know, to break the rules? On the other hand, if there is no rule out there and the behavior is accepted, why would that stop them from doing it?
Exactly. I mean, the rule, there has to be a penalty.
Yes, yes.
And I guess the penalty would be suspension as it is incognito.
Well, there could be... Right, there could be a suspension from the team, and there could, or there could be a suspension from the NFL.
What was his case? The suspension from NFL?
I believe so. I think there was a maximum of 4 games for that, and then the last thing that I heard is he wanted to know why he wasn't being put back on the team after the 4 games, and I haven't heard anything about that.
No, okay, because I read he was suspended indefinitely.
Right, but the rule was for that I believe it was the maximum of 4 games that you could be suspended for that. Now, who knows if he was being charged with other things? You know, you could add things. Is his behavior detrimental to the team chemistry? You know, so the team may, you know, then a team could suspend the player for as long as they want. So there's bullying on the one aspect. But then there's, you know, behavior that's detrimental to the team.
Now, what happens to him if he's kicked off? There becomes a whole slump for him, correct? A whole mental, embarrassment from the public eye.
Sure.
He lost a game he loves.
Mm-hmm.
He's ruined, right? He can't. Can he go to another team without them thinking, wait a minute, this guy's a bully. Should we really bring him in? We might be open to lawsuits.
Well, he could go to another team. I would think that the next step, if he does get kicked off his team, is that he goes to the players' union, you know, to find out, you know, if he's getting kicked off the team, is that allowed? And if it is allowed, is his contract going to be voided or is it going to be honored? If it is honored, is he allowed to go and try out for another team? Is he going to be branded that no team is going to hire him, because then all of a sudden that's unfair, you know, when that happens. And so we'll see. You know, we will definitely see. It's certainly going to be in the news. And in many cases, when this stuff happens, these people will never, ever be the same. You know how one thing can happen in the media, and no matter what you've ever done in your life, that keeps coming up over and over and over again. Look at Alex Rodriguez. You know, a few years ago, we were looking at him as possibly breaking the all-time home run record, and now A-Rod will be looked at nothing having to do with how great of an athlete he was. The same thing with Barry Bonds, the same thing with Roger Clemens, and now we're shifting over to the NFL.
And this, to me, is highly unfair, that everything you've worked for in a moment is taken away from you.
I agree with you. You know,
even that
cyclist
who won all those
Lance Armstrong
medals.
Yes. Yeah. You know,
isn't there a heavy psychological price there? They must sink into a deep depression and whatever.
They certainly can. You know, hopefully they get the right counseling and the right direction, and then, you know, time can heal many wounds, and if he gets the right guidance, he'll recognize his mistakes. He'll take responsibility for his mistakes. He'll learn from it. You know, we have had many athletes that have gone in the wrong path that have given back to their community and helping out others. For example, Darryl Strawberry. He was in jail, and he was looked at as possibly being suicidal, and he turned his whole entire life around to go help other people. You know, unfortunately, sometimes it does take something this traumatic. You know, that someone's life is on the line before they're able to turn it around. You know, in psychology we call this, you know, having a breakdown. In order to have a breakthrough, we often have to go through a breakdown. Yet sometimes the breakdowns can be traumatic and people end up dying. And other times they turn their life around instead of just leading a life that's going nowhere. Now they had to take, by dropping down, they were able to see the light at the end of the tunnel and recognize, I want to live and I want to give back.
And that's when they have to depend on real friends and good family.
There's no doubt. Everybody needs their own good support network, people that you can trust, people that will be there for you in your time of need, and people that you know that you can go to. You know, and don't think for a second because you're very popular and you have thousands of people on your side when you're at the top of your game that all these people are going to be there for you when things don't go your way.
The public is very fickle.
That's right. That's right. You know.
Well, is there anything I haven't asked you that you want to discuss? Because we're getting close to the end of our time.
I think you did it. You covered a whole bunch of topics. This was a lot of fun to talk to you. Thank you, you know, for all the questions that you asked. Hopefully people are listening and they find interest, and I'm here to help.
Well, I think they will, since bullying is in the news now and people are wanting to do something about it.
Yes, yes.
It's taken us a while, but we got there.
That's right. That's right. And hopefully all teams are going to have some sort of policy to identify this behavior and prevent it so it doesn't happen anymore.
Well, I want to thank you for coming on the show, Dr. Stephen Fryerman, and discussing the subject of bullying. And thank you so much.
Well, thank you. It was my pleasure.
And this is the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul. As always, I'm your host, Deirdre Schuler. And I want to thank my listeners for making my topic topically yours.
Okay. Hello?
Been listening to the Blake Radio Network Rainbow Soul.